What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, here today with John Kegley, my co-host. We both write for San Diego Sports Domination and started our own Facebook Live show 3 years ago called Chargers Domination Live, which was when we started covering the team. And since we did pretty well with that, now we are signed on with the Locked On Chargers podcast to bring you an every day of the week show and to just keep the content coming for you guys. We have a lot to talk about today after a rough Sunday for the Chargers. We've already recapped the game, but today we're going to get into the pro football focus grades of Chargers players on offense and defense. We are also going to get into the big question of what is the Chargers defense without Joey Bosa? I think that's important to talk about. And then we're also going to get to some good press conference sound from the game as well. But first, how are you doing, John?
Can we hurry up and fast forward to the Bills game?
I think there's a lot of people that would love to fast forward to the Bills game. And for good reason, they just lost 47-3, and Sean McDermott hasn't ruled out Nathan Peterman, which is probably safe to say he's not going to be a great quarterback. I think the jury's still out. No, I'm just kidding. He's awful. I honestly don't understand that at all. But, John, we do have a partnership with Pro Football Focus where they're letting us use their player grades and some of their stats. And I think this game had a lot of very telling player grades, and I think I agree with pretty much all of them for the most part. And the first one I want to start with is Dan Feeney. Dan Feeney, the promising young left guard who they took in the third round of last year's draft, got the worst grade of anyone in this game. He had a 27.3 at left guard. And, I mean, it showed. Getting beat on run plays, letting Phillip Rivers get sacked. I mean, he was just very bad most of the day, John. What did you see out of Dan Feeney?
I saw what I saw last year, which was a guy that was getting beat, pushed around. Like when we played Denver opening day, and the field goal was blocked because he got completely driven off the line. It was basically happening again. He can't hold his own yet. I don't know if that's because he's not strong enough yet. He doesn't have his foot placement yet. I don't know what it is, but he's still getting bullied at the line. And that grade is actually dead on. The 27.3 is dead on a grade you would give him for this game because he could not stop anybody. He couldn't even stop a fly from coming through a window if you gave him every single option possible to close that window.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it. And it seems like if even with just being bullied and kind of pushed around, it seems like if you have a stunt and somehow a defensive end ends up one-on-one with him and puts any sort of move on him, he's done. And that's a problem, especially because the rest of the left side of the line, John, was very good. Pouncey had a 70.8 and Okung had a 73.5. And sandwiched in between them is a 27.3. Like, that's a really bad start for him and just a major chink in the armor.
You remind you of Chris Watt, where he would get completely out of place on a stunt, and then Rivers would get sacked or someone would get hurt because of him. This is kind of the same thing, if you will, with Dan Feeney.
Yeah, and hopefully, I mean, I think we saw some progress for him as the season went on last year. I think we saw some little improvements in his game, but it seems like he definitely is back to where he started, which isn't a great sign. I think there's still hope. I don't think he's totally Chris Watt level yet, because I think there still is a chance he could be decent. I don't think he's going to be very good, but I think he can be serviceable with the right coaching. The number I was most impressed with, John, had to be Derwin James putting up a 70 grade in this game, in his first NFL game, playing all 56 defensive snaps. We talked about the big plays he made yesterday, but how impressed were you with Derwin James in the first game of his rookie season?
Man, the fact that he kept up with a lot of these Chiefs players who are all really fast was amazing. This is a rookie going up against guys like Anthony Thomas, Tyreek Hill, guys with a bunch of speed, and he was able to keep up with them. There was a deep pass to Anthony Thomas that he literally caught back up to and knocked it away in the end zone. And he got a sack. He was all over the field. He looked amazing. And I think a 70 is actually a little bit low for what I saw in the game. I'd probably go maybe around 78, 80 area, but he looked amazing, and I could see why he got drafted where he did.
It's hard to say this without sounding like a homer, but, I mean, just the way he moves, the way he covers ground, the way he plays in the running game, and once he's close to the line of scrimmage, he just looks like, not an all-time great, I wouldn't say that, but he looks like he has everything it takes to be one of the star safeties in the league. Yeah, I mean, especially Jahlil Adai getting a 50 grade and missing a huge tackle. To put up a 70, I mean, with really harsh critics and Pro Football Focus, I think was huge. And I think that there's no ceiling on what this guy can be in the NFL if he keeps developing and playing the way he did this weekend. And the other guy I want to talk about in the defensive backfield was Desmond King, who had a 78 highest amongst the defensive backs. And, I mean, kind of going with what we were saying before the season, John, that at the end of this season, we could see Desmond King as the best defensive back, the best cornerback on this team. He had a 78, while Casey Hayward and Trevor Williams didn't play that great at all. Neither one of them scored more than a 55. How do you think Desmond King played in this game? Do you agree with the grade?
Well, if I remember correctly, he was mostly covering D'Anthony Thomas and Sammy Watkins, while Casey Hayward had to try to maintain Tyreek Hill, which is not an easy task. So in this game, I don't really see these grades being an accurate measure of the players. But Desmond King did really well at locking down his defenders, was in his spots on any zone coverage. I thought he did phenomenally well, but I did see him miss a few tackles that I think needs to be fixed a little bit. But I want to ask you this, Wade. With the way the Chargers had to play against this speedy defensive team, if you had put Desmond King on Tyreek Hill and Casey Hayward on Sammy Watkins or D'Anthony Thomas in the greats flip-flop, what would we be thinking today?
No, I mean, I agree with you, and I don't think that most of those Tyreek Hill plays were Casey Hayward's fault by any means. I think Casey Hayward definitely got the tougher matchup between those two guys, but honestly, I think Desmond King might match up better against Tyreek Hill than Casey Hayward does. I think Casey Hayward is better with a receiver like Sammy Watkins, where he can stick in his pocket and possession-type receivers and bat the ball away. Do I think that Desmond King is going to shut down Tyreek Hill? No, I do not, by any means. But I think of those three guys, Desmond King might be the best matchup out of that group right there.
Because he could probably make the tackle better and do a better pursuit angle after Tyreek Hill catches a quick pass. Would you agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm not worried about Desmond King's tackling because he has showed to be a good tackler in the past. He also made some good tackles in this game as well. So I'm not really worried about Desmond King in that aspect of it. But there is a very worrying sign for me, John, and that's Kyle Emanuel puts up a 41.8 grade on 13 snaps, while Uchenna Nwosu only has 2 snaps in the game. And Kyle Emanuel was most notable in this game for getting burned by the fullback out of the backfield for a 36-yard touchdown. I thought we all agreed that Uchenna Nwosu was going to be the starter. I guess we forgot to tell Anthony Lynn, because there's no possible reason in the world that Nwosu shouldn't be starting over Emmanuel, even though he put up just a 57.7 grade. But hey, that's on 2 plays. Give the kid a shot. Your defense isn't doing anything. Why would you not try to throw him in there and see if something changes?
I could not believe he only played 2 snaps when you told me that. I thought I saw him in the game more, but then again, I was in the end zone, so I probably mixed up numbers. But the fact that he only played 2 after the preseason that he had a really good preseason. And you're playing against a team that likes to throw the ball quick. He's a linebacker that can stop that. You have a team that is really fast and can break tackles. He can tackle. Why is Kyle Emanuel, a guy that can't even cover a fullback or can't cover regardless for that matter, in this game more than Nwosu? I'm totally shocked by the fact you told me this stat, and I don't know what we're going to see against Buffalo, but if Kyle Emanuel plays more snaps than Nwosu for the second week in a row, it's going to start making a big discussion amongst the Chargers fan base, in my opinion.
And that's the thing with Anthony Lynn being our player's coach. I mean, it just seems like sometimes he's loyal to these guys to a fault. I know in his post-game press conference, he said that, you know, J.J. Jones doesn't lose his job from one mistake, when I counted multiple mistakes in that game, at least three mistakes, all on special teams from him. When you can't separate those things, I think it really affects your ability to coach, John. And the last one I want to get to real quick, Tyrell Williams had 62 snaps. Mike Williams had 44, while Travis Benjamin had 47. I think we think those should flip-flop. I think Mike Williams should definitely be in the starting rotation. And I don't think there's much argument to that, because Mike Williams was just the second best receiver on the field on Sunday.
I would absolutely agree that he needs to be more of the starting role. If I had to take a pick, I would have probably Keenan Allen with Mike Williams on the outside, and then Tyrell Williams could be in the slot, and then you just flip Mike Williams and Tyrell Williams based on what play you're going to run. So, like, if you're going to run a crossing route with Tyrell, maybe put him on the outside and Mike Williams on the inside. Just stuff like that. And then Travis Benjamin should just have his own select amount of plays per game. I don't know a number you could put on that yet, but you can come in for maybe some reverses or a few deep passes here and there, because he doesn't like getting hit. He avoids a lot of the hits for a two-yard game when he could have ran through the hit and got a first down. Travis Benjamin probably needs to have his snaps limited and let Mike Williams play, because he showed in this game he could be a weapon, and he showed it when it was crunch time.
Yeah, I agree. It was all in the fourth quarter, all 81 of his yards. It's not as if Travis Benjamin had a good grade in this game. I mean, obviously you saw it with the drops. I mean, you didn't need Pro Football Focus to tell you that Travis Benjamin didn't have a good game. He had a 52.4, and Tyrell Williams had a 46.5. While Mike Williams doesn't have his grade on there yet, I'm sure it's going to be higher than those guys. It just has to be. And the last stat I want to get to is the highest performer of the game went to Darius Filon. So good for Darius Filon stepping up and really, you know, cementing himself in his spot, with Meebane getting a 54.3. I mean, you can't even compare those guys right now. But I do want to talk more about Mike Williams. So let's hear what Coach Anthony Lynn had to say about Mike Williams getting on the field more. But that's coming up next. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually it's what team to bet on this week, but the truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you've got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they are your best bet this season, because they've been in business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me for my listeners. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you guys that love fantasy out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar when you use our promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, John. Well, we want to give you guys some good audio from the games. We're making a point to have that segment each week for you guys. And I think we have some good audio to listen to that really kind of explains some key parts to this game. I want to start with Anthony Lynn talking about Forrest Lamp and Mike Williams. Obviously, Forrest Lamp did not play in this game, John, which was a little bit surprising that he just wasn't dressed at all, even for maybe a backup role if it was needed. He was just inactive. And we got to hear a little bit of Anthony Lynn's thoughts on that from his post-game press conference.
He's not ready. But he hadn't played football in 18 months. You know, he played his fourth preseason game, and he's just not there yet.
John, what did you think of Anthony Lynn just saying that Forrest Lamp wasn't ready to play in this game?
I'm questioning it. I heard he had a pretty good training camp and was ready to go once he got on the field. So I definitely did question. I thought he could have at least been the backup role and got a few snaps here or there to get him back into game-ready shape. But at the same time, this was the Chiefs, who are really good at pressure with Andy Reid's defense. he'd probably have a better chance against the Bills next week, maybe, to play if they let him play. But he is right. He hasn't played in a long time, so you can't just throw a guy out there and expect him to play and not get hurt or be ready to go and not feel sore, like, halfway through the game. But I thought he should have at least suited up and gotten some snaps.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think part of this goes to just the Chargers' lack of clarity with injuries, because obviously we just saw Joey Bosa, who went from a day-to-day, very minor foot injury to a setback and a second opinion this week. So I think they're very hesitant, especially with injured guys, to bring them back and rush them in. But, I mean, he knows the need they have for him on this offensive line, especially we're waiting to see what happens with Joe Barksdale, who left this game with an injury. Right now there's some major question marks, and a lot of those get filled if Forrest Lamp can play and play at a high level. So I think that's very important. And Anthony Lynn also discussed Mike Williams and what we could see from him in the future, and if he could get some more snaps. All of this audio is brought to you from thechargers.com.
Yeah, you know, we're going to always throw the football, and Phil does a good job throwing the football to what the defense give. And so if they didn't give him Mike, then I'm sure there's a reason why. But you can scheme a guy and get him open. And Mike has definitely had a good camp, and I thought he did some things very well in the second half. So we'll take a look at the film, and we'll see what happens. You know, like I said, I need to evaluate the tape before I say that he played well or played bad, but I thought he made some plays from the sideline. And you can see his speed and length, and that's why we brought him here, for games like this.
All right, John, well, there's his thoughts on it. I mean, I think I could tell that Mike Williams was having a good game. I get what he's saying about if Phillip Rivers isn't throwing him the ball, he's probably not open. But I think when he watches the film, he'll have no choice but to play Mike Williams more after this game.
I absolutely agree with you. There was plays where he wasn't open as far as wide open, but there was plays where Rivers threw it to him when he wasn't wide open but was able to sneak it in there for a catch like they do to Keenan Allen, where it's quick slant throw of the guys on his back, but you throw it out there long enough where only he can get it. It's either incomplete or it's a catch. Mike Williams will bring it in, and he did it a couple of times in this game. So I think they should definitely look at the tape and ship and see that he can literally play even with a guy on his back, and he could throw the ball to him more, play more than Travis Benjamin. Literally, you got to limit Travis Benjamin's snaps and get Mike Williams on the field. I think this could be kind of what the Chiefs were, a big play type team, but instead of a short pass going for long plays, we'd be more of a couple of short passes here, and then here's our 30 to 40 yard play.
Yeah, and Phillip Rivers has said before that Mike Williams is kind of a Vincent Jackson type. I mean, Vincent Jackson was great. I think Mike Williams could be better than Vincent Jackson, which is saying a lot. And I just think that he brings multiple facets to his game. Some of these Chargers wide receivers besides Keenan Allen are very one-dimensional. And I just think he brings a different dynamic to your offense when he's on the field. The one end zone target he got was poorly thrown, I would say. And the defender made a good play on it. But Mike Williams, we've still yet to see the best of him, which is saying a lot after a pretty good game. But let's hear what Phillip Rivers had to say on Chargers.com about his game and what could have been.
Today we should have thrown for 600, which is crazy to say, but we should have thrown for 600 yards in an NFL game. And we just didn't get it done. I had a couple just a hair overthrown. We had a couple we didn't bring down. You know, I had to turn over down in there that all affect points. The name against this game is points. And so, as I say, we should have had 600 yards and whoever knows how many more yards. You got to score. You got to score one more than the other team, and we didn't get that done today. I'm super fired up about this year because it's not many times you can miss, you know, four touchdowns and turn the ball over down the red zone, drop a punt inside the 10, get a 90-yard punt return on you, and really – all that said, should have been a three-point game with three timeouts left, you know, with a minute to play. So we're going to be just fine.
And, John, I don't know if you can really summarize the game any better than that. Leave it to Phillip Rivers to just kind of, without taking anybody out specifically, just really sum up the Chargers game, but also giving you some reason to hope for the future, because with all of the things that went wrong, they still had a – I mean, they didn't really have a chance to the Chargers, but they still had a chance to stay in the game.
They definitely still had a chance to stay in the game. If you even just complete one of those touchdowns, if that game's probably 38-35, and we don't have to rush that kicker on the field to tie the game. If you catch two of those touchdowns, you're probably looking at a lead and trying to hold Kansas City. I mean, there's just so many possibilities that could have happened. And in the end, a game that was full of mistakes was only a 10-point loss. And Rivers sums it up with all the drop passes, some of the ones he overthrew, the bad mistakes he did with throwing it in an interception. But overall, it was the drop balls that really made a big difference in this game. It was wide open in the end zone. It wasn't a drop ball for a first down where you could have said, well, they could have still punted it. No, they were in the end zone or they were wide open heading to the end zone and dropped them. It's the story of the game.
It absolutely is the story of the game. And I think, like you said, he summed it up perfectly. And you just leave it at that. It's one of those games where that's how it went down. You made a ton of mistakes. But it's not too late for this team, and this team did still show some of the promise that we had as far as expectations going into the season. But the one thing we didn't hear them talk about in all the videos is Joey Bosa and what his absence meant for the team, and we'll get into that next. All right, John, well, it's time for Joey Bosa talk. Joey Bosa right now is thought to be out for the next 2 to 4 weeks. We are waiting on a second opinion from his doctor who might have misdiagnosed it to begin with. So that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But right now, the gray cloud hanging around the Joey Bosa situation is really horrifying for a Chargers fan base that expects things to go wrong every time they can go wrong. And I know a lot of people are on the edge of their seats waiting to see if Joey Bosa appears on the injured reserve next week somehow out of nowhere because of what we've seen in the past. There's no clarity on it. And it's hard to say, John, how we feel about the Joey Bosa thing right now because we have no idea what's actually wrong with his foot. And it's just so hard because we don't know what this defense can be without him.
Well, according to ESPN, they say it's a bone bruise, and he's supposed to get looked at a foot specialist for what's supposed to be a hairline fracture or something in his foot, too. So that gives you an idea of what's wrong with his foot. But without him on this defense, it definitely takes away from our pass rush, but could he make a difference in this game? I mean, I don't know, because We showed improvement on the run defense. I mean, it wasn't great, but we had showed improvement on it, and that was without Joey Bosa, whereas last year we were one of the worst run defenses with Joey Bosa. So that can create a big argument. I know people are probably wanting to throw their glass bottles through the screen at me right now, but it's something that gives you something to think about. Like, what is Joey Bosa with this defense? What is Joey Bosa without the defense? What do you think, Wade?
Well, I think that, I mean, when you're talking about Joey Bosa, you're talking about what is Denver's defense without Von Miller? What was the Raiders' defense without Khalil Mack? I mean, the Raiders' defense was bad last year with Khalil Mack being great. And if you saw anything last night, you saw how good that guy really is, especially when playing with other good players. So I don't know if he's as good as those guys, but I think he has the same effect on the Chargers defense as far as being on the field. It's just a player that you don't get often, John. I mean, he was taken with a 3rd overall pick in the draft. I mean, he had all the expectations and he has met those expectations and even surpassed them besides the injuries that he's had. I think that the Chargers defense without Joey Bosa goes from an elite defense to probably a good defense. I would still say you still have a 10 sack a year guy with Melvin Ingram. You still have great players in the secondary and some up and coming players in the front 7, John. So I think getting Joey Bosa back is the difference for this team being a playoff team and maybe not being a playoff team. I don't think that's exaggerating. I think it could come down to that if he has to miss too much time. Could the Chargers still make the playoffs without Joey Bosa? I think so, but I think if they just miss it this year, John, and Joey Bosa misses a lot of time, I think that's the first place people are going to go.
I think what people also need to remember, though, is we're talking sacks here. Like, how's our sacks and pass rush going to be? It's also the fact that you make teams have to study more. So if you're a football team, you're going to study Isaac Rochelle. What are you studying? You're not really studying, but you're studying a guy that has some talent that could probably do some stuff, but you study him real quick. You go, okay, just block him, and we'll run this way. When you have Joey Bosa on the field, you have to study him, plan him. Where's his weakness? What's his strength? How do we go here? Do we need a double team, not a double team? And then that's just Joey Bosa. There's also the whole other defense you have to worry about. So it also makes teams screw up more as far as trying to remember more and having to double block him. So that means that maybe a linebacker could come off the blitz and make the sack. So Joey Bosa, I mean, I got credit for that sack, but he was responsible for it because when he's there, it's double team. If it's Rochelle, it's single team. These are all factors of Bosa being in this defense. And as you mentioned, it could be the difference between a playoff team and not making the playoffs. I mean, the Browns tied the Steelers this past weekend. And we play the Steelers, and I don't see Le'Veon Bell coming back anytime soon. And if you have Joey Bosa and you beat the Steelers, you just got a win that no one expected you to get.
Exactly, and I think that it does make the difference. I think he elevates the play of those around him. Like you said, commanding double teams, commanding that kind of respect. And Joey Bosa made the top 20 of the Pro Football Focus grade in 2017. He was the number 16 in grading amongst all players in the NFL. And then you compare that to Isaac Rochelle having a 37.9 in this game. That's a pretty substantial drop off, John. And I think that you definitely might see a little bit more Chris Landrum in the future because of the struggles of Isaac Rochelle in this game. And I mean, from a 91.7 grade last year, John, which is just ridiculous. No single player had that number in this game, but to sustain that over a season and then have the drop off to a 37.9 grade. I know those are just numbers, but I think that adequately tells the story because it is that big of a drop-off, and that is how important Joey Bosa is to this team and how good of a player Joey Bosa is in this league. He ranked even higher than Calais Campbell, Landon Collins, and Jalen Ramsey right behind him. So he is just ridiculously good, and the sooner they can get him on the field, the better. But obviously now you cannot try to rush him back. There's no chances you can take with this guy because he is your franchise cornerstone defensive player. And between him and Derwin James, I mean, could be two all-time greats if they can keep it together and progressing the way they have so far.
And there's no telling who we draft next year because we are in need of a defensive tackle who can cause havoc like Joey Bosa and Derwin James can do. So who knows what this defense could be like with Bosa, Derwin James, and a new defensive tackle. And you already have Nwosu and White as the up-and-coming guys. There's a lot here with this Bosa topic. It's not just, is he going to play this year? It's also, what about the future with him? Because some players don't come back from an injury that well. If this is a hairline fracture or a broken foot, it's much worse than we all thought it was. Because training camp, you know this way. They were all saying it's not much of a deal. We expect him to play week one, and now it's, oh, he's out 2 to 4 weeks with a bone bruise. He's going to get evaluated for a hairline fracture. Who knows what he's going to get evaluated for? Oh, now he has a broken foot. He's out 8 weeks, and it's just going to be a bunch of stuff to worry about.
Yeah, it really is, and it always sucks to just have this hanging over your head. Obviously, it's worse to lose Hunter Henry for the whole season, but just to not know with this guy and when he's going to get back means all the difference. And you're right, he never has had a great interior defensive lineman next to him to really accentuate his skills. I mean, could you imagine him and Aaron Donald on the same line, him and Ndamukong Suh on the same line? I mean, it's just he's never had that guy to take any pressure off of him on the inside, which even just gives him more credit because of what he's done at that position. But, John, that's going to do it for today's show. Everybody, thanks for listening. Tomorrow will be the crossover episode of the week where we meet up with the Buffalo Bills Locked On host. So make sure to tune back in for that. Also, we're going to have more shows later on for you this week. So make sure to check back in with us throughout the week and follow us on Twitter at Locked On LAC. Also, go like our Facebook page, which is very new. So we need some likes on that bad boy because we're going to be doing some more live shows from that account. So make sure to head over there and like that page And once again, thanks for listening. You guys take it easy, and we'll see you later this week. Go Bolts.